Hello, listeners.
You're a bit quiet, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
Hey. I'm just going to let you in a little secret here. Before we record each podcast, we all sit in silence. Graham records some silence, which he then uses as a sample silence for later noise reduction. I'm simplifying there, but he's nodding. Today, we haven't recorded any silence. Because we're in the most silent place ever.
It is very quiet. Your voice sounds quite different.
It's because I live in the north again now. Yes.
Where are we, Andrew?
Where are we?
We're in a conference hall in Manchester, at the Manchester Central Conference Centre, which is where the Raspberry Jamboree Pi thing is. Mm. Mike, you came up with a much better name than Ras Jamboree, didn't you?
Oh, Jaminar. But
Jaminar.
As of now, that is trademark Linux Voice Limited.
Excellent stuff.
Okay.
Creative Commons in 9 months.
Yeah.
So it's a great big room with carpet and like lighting and a gantry, and there's a bit where the security guards are watching us.
Yeah.
And curtains and things, and it's great. It's so much better than those.
We could have our own conference in here.
Yeah!
VoiceCon. That sounds a bit spooky, actually, doesn't it?
We could call it Odd Camp Manchester and set up a rift between between the Scousers and the Monks.
As if there weren't any already.
That'd be great. That'd be a right laugh. Anyway, so it's time. It's time now to start talking at a normal level and kick off the Linux Voice podcast. Series 2, Episode 4. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
I'm Graham Morrison.
And I'm Mike Saunders.
And in this Linux-packed podcast full of Linux voices. Quite literally.
I'm glad your phone still works.
Have you still got the sticky label on?
No, I took it off.
Oh, why? What happened?
Well, it came off by accident. I didn't mean to do it, but I've still got the photograph, the sticky label on the lens, so my photos are all nicely blurred.
Oh, okay. You might be able to get a new sticker from eBay. Oh,
that would be great.
Or just carve Nexus into the middle of the screen.
So in this episode, we've got updates from my phone, news, finds of the fortnight, vocalise your neurons, and the voice of the masses.
Sounds wonderful.
It does sound wonderful.
If people like this podcast, they might like...
Hey.
It's over here on the floor.
You've just touched on something big there, Mike.
Yeah.
Well, and also, there's a... Yes, if you like the sound of this podcast, you might want to go to... Actually, you already are at linuxvoice.com because that's how you're getting hold of the podcast. You might want to buy Linux Voice. It's a new magazine written by us, written and edited by us, and our lovely team of delightful freelancers. Mm. And issue one went on sale in the UK today, first time ever.
We're recording this on the 27th of February.
Yeah, I'll try and edit it, but I've got to drive all the way back from Manchester to the frozen south.
If I do the steering wheel,
yeah, I just tell you, cut.
So I've got a copy here. Let's just say you can buy subscriptions at shop.linuxvoice.com. Listen to this. Oh yeah,
that is it. This is Andrew has in his trembling hands,
in my mortal hands, nuggets of purest Linux Voice.
Pure win.
It's yeah. It's really, really good. In the contents page, there's just so too many even to mention. But in homage to earlier times, we've called the letters page "Speak Your Brains," mainly in recognition of the fact that nobody sends letters anymore. So we could call it "Your Emails," but that'd just be a bit lame. So you can buy that for the princely sum of not many pounds.
And of course, by buying it, you get to support free software as well, because at the end of each financial year, 50% of our profits go back to the free software community.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah.
Readers
will vote on which projects they want to support, so that's why we're a different magazine.
And the other 50% will go to the Salamander.
Yeah.
Well, 25% to the Salamander, 25% to the tax man.
True.
Yes, sir. I was on the phone to the tax people for an hour and 20 minutes the day before yesterday. turns out, this is absolutely infuriating. You've got one password for multiple government services, except that the entry field for one service accepts lots of characters. The entry field for the other service only accepts 12 characters. So our password being longer than 12 characters, I kept putting it in, and it kept truncating and not working. So I've really tried to pay you money, Taxman. I really want to give you... I don't actually want to give you any money, but, you know, we did try, and it just kept failing for that one really, really stupid reason.
So the lesson is, have a password of ABC123 and you're fine.
That is our password.
Great. Genius.
So the password for the other one, you just type in the first 12 characters of your password.
Yeah.
Surely that means that they're not hashing the passwords. Unless they hash it separately when you first create it, which they may do, but it seems unlikely to me. It probably means they've only encrypted the password.
They've probably just hashed the first 12 digits and they don't use the rest.
Ah, that's possible as well.
Maybe, yeah. We hope so. But
those extra digits are just to help with your memory.
I do find it easier to remember longer passwords.
Was it correct battery horse staple? XKCD, sir.
Career.
That's the root password for linuxvoice.com.
So there's a potential security vulnerability in HMRC's password storage thing. Maybe you could use that to steal all the tax that Vodafone have paid this year.
How much tax have Vodafone paid this year?
Probably less than us.
Anyway,
so yes, to recap, podcast.
It is a podcast, yeah.
Yes.
Magazine.
Podcast, magazine, subscribe, shop.linuxvoice.com. And now, here's some news.
News. Well, you've stolen the first item of my news, which was the magazine launch. So just to recap, magazine launched.
Yes.
Item two.
We can't bore everyone with it. But it does feel amazing. I haven't seen it in the news agents yet, but we're all incredibly grateful that you've enabled us to carry on, dear listeners. So thank you.
Yes, thanks a lot for that.
I only held the paper copy in my hands for the first time today, and it felt good.
It does feel good. It's been an absolutely immense amount of work, hasn't it, to do it? All the things we had to organise with distribution, printing, things like that. It's been the business.
It has, but it's been incredible as well.
It's felt good to make something that's ours and not be bossed around by...
I don't think any of us, well, I certainly never really accepted the idea that it might actually really happen. You know, just took every day as it comes.
Well, do you think you might wake up one morning and have to go to Westgate?
Well, yes, that's true, yeah.
So. Ben, you picked it up, the copy for the first day today. Are your arms tired?
The sheer weight of it.
Because you may be used to handling other inferior Linux magazines that only have 98 pages.
Indeed.
How many pages is Linux Voice?
So according to the cover, it's 114 pages.
That's lots of pages.
And the extra 4 gigabytes on the DVD add to the weight as well.
All the data.
Yeah, all those pits and land.
Okay, moving away from the magazine and onto more Linux-related news.
No, back to the magazine.
Let's pull Andrew away from the magazine.
Ubuntu, they're launching phones, and they've revealed the phones that they're going to be launched, or at least two of them. It is the BQ Aquarius, something like that, which has an A7 quad-core, fancy, big screen, swipey phone type thing. The other one is the MX3, which has an 8-core processor.
8 cores in your phone.
Octophone.
Yes.
I just don't understand.
5.1 inch screen. I mean,
5.1, that's significant.
I've only used the Ubuntu Touch on the Nexus 7, and it did feel like it needed a bigger screen. I don't think it would work on some of the smaller phones, and I suspect it needs a power as well.
Right.
Because it is a bit more swishy and whooshy.
It is very swishy and whooshy.
Swishy and whooshy. Technical term.
So the 5.1 mega swishers.
Yes. I really like the look of it. If they get it right, it'll be a really good operating system. If they get it wrong, it'll be rubbish. That's a keen insight.
Yeah, same with many things.
Thanks, Ben.
But the reason I say that, it's all down to the scopes they use. And if you use Unity on desktop, you'll know the scopes are things when you click on the dash, and it sort of shows you a view over your system. So you can use it to search for videos, and it'll search for videos on your system and the World Wide Web and whatnot, and send all your data up to Amazon, which a lot of people hate. But these scopes, they allow you to view things in a particular way, and it works exactly the same on the phone. You can swipe side to side, you have your app scope, you have your home scope, etc., etc. And in my view, if they can pick the right scopes, it'll be a really good system. But when I used it, the earlier version last year, they hadn't quite got it right. All the scopes were a bit, they're graphically wonderful, but it just didn't feel like the right way to use a phone.
So when are these phones going to be available?
Well, according to Ubuntu, about end of last year. we'll wait and see. They should be available later in the year.
And is it for a global market or is it just for some Chinese market? I'm sorry I'm asking you these questions, but I didn't read up on it properly.
Didn't they say at the launch, first quarter of 2014, back when I had the mini burgers?
I thought they said the end of 13, the last quarter of 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they pushed it back, and now they're saying this year. We shall see.
It's brilliant. It's great that they've been able to do it. I just wonder whether it's going to be a wide scale. And is it running on top of Android? Is it running...
I mean, in terms of the actual kernel they use, well, actually, it's the same kernel now for Linux and Android. But no, it's not a skin for Android.
Right, right.
It's
their own, and completely their own environment.
I believe so. I suspect they've got bits and bobs from Android.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, it is a new operating system. It won't run Android apps.
No.
This could be huge for Canonical. It really could be huge.
It could be. I don't know if there's a gap in the market where they're going, though.
Maybe not here.
No, not here, but the market is just growing hugely everywhere else.
It's true, but Apple have just got the high-end swishy-wishy phone market snapped up.
But this is even more swishy-wishy.
It's true.
No, he said swishy-wushy.
Oh, swishy-wishy. No,
they're two different markets.
Wishy-swishy.
I mean, Firefox went in at the low end and there was a definite gap there. And they're trying to make phones for $25
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I saw this.
I don't know if they'll make it, but that's...
Or if they do, if the user experience will be so sluggish and disappointing, it might be counterproductive.
I guess it depends what you're choosing. I mean, in the UK, we sort of used to think, oh, 25, if you can afford 25 quid, you can probably afford 50 quid and just stretch it a bit more and get a slightly better phone. But for some people, 25 quid is all they could afford.
Yep.
And it's a choice between that phone or nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that, you're prepared to put up with slightly poor performance.
Yeah, yeah.
But we shall see. Yes, moving away from phones and onto the government. The government makes it hard for us to pay our money, but they do want to use open document format to store their data in. And they said, well, this is going to be wonderful. We're going to cost, going to save tens of millions of pounds a year by breaking the... Is it oligopoly? Is that how you pronounce it?
Oligopoly.
Oligopoly. That's it, oligopoly. I'm not very good at English, mate.
Don't say that now.
Yeah. If only there was a spell checker for speaking. That would be brilliant.
Also, somebody just walked past Ben carrying food.
I got distracted. they want to break the oligopoly of IT suppliers. Microsoft have said this is wrong. They've said the oligopoly of IT suppliers is a good thing, and it's what's making everything wonderful. Actually, no, they said they shouldn't switch to ODF because everyone supports Doc and DocX.
And DocX is ISO, rubbish they spit out.
Yeah, whatever, despite the
really,
fact
really complicated, ever-changing standard.
Yeah. All the standard really is how it works in Office.
Yeah.
That is essentially what all of those pages come down to. See what happens in Office, do that. That's not a standard. Get your stuff together, Microsoft.
So is the government renegotiating better prices with Microsoft again?
It's quite possible, to be honest.
That's usually why these things happen, is it? Oh, we're moving to Linux, but really,
Well, to be honest, if they wanted to do that, they could just pass a law saying that the government doesn't have to pay software licences.
And in fact, there's a fantastic story going into issue 2 of Linux Voice when Mike interviewed the guys.
There's going to be an issue 2?
In Munich. Yeah.
Yes, we both interviewed. Peter Hoffman, the guy in charge of the transition of the Munich City Council, 15,000 computers they moved from Windows to Linux. It was fascinating to talk to him about the ups and downs. And there's some very good anecdotes about Steve Ballmer coming to the city.
That's what made me think about it. As soon as Microsoft realised...
Steve Ballmer went to visit Munich Council.
He did. It was actually... I'm not going to reveal too much about the feature, but it was really cool because it had an adverse effect, as well as being a giant, sweaty ape. Peter Hoffman told us, well... the Munich City Council thought, if they think they can just send one guy up to change our minds, one guy from big corporation change our minds, then that makes us even less likely to change our minds. You know, not doing anything convincing, just, oh, he's going to come waltz in and he'll change our minds.
It was great, yeah.
So he walked home, flew home with his tail between his legs. And
I used to work with the Tanzanian government and was chatting to some guys who did...
As you do.
Who worked on the implementation of the software system for teacher training colleges. And they actually went with a system based on Sun's technology using virtualization? Yeah. Not real computer. Thin clients. Yeah. And anyway, it was all going through. And the president, I forget which, it might have been Benjamin and Kappa was the president at the time. But he was in Europe, I think Switzerland, for hospital treatment. And Microsoft sent someone to him saying, perhaps this would persuade you to move that system away. And he's not known for his honesty, Benjamin Kappa, but he did turn it away and say, no, that just makes you... It makes it obvious you're trying to exploit us.
Wow. What other podcast brings you that?
You know, when I was at university, I used to work in a fudge shop. It's great. It's really tasty.
I worked in a video rental store and washed dishes in a Chinese.
And you worked for Wessex Water, didn't you? Or was it that was after?
Seven Trent. Yeah, that was just after.
Yeah.
And then I got a real job.
What was that?
No, I didn't.
That sounded like a good time of your life.
Okay. The next item of news on the agenda, Linux Containers 1.0 has been released and it's now considered production ready. Linux Containers, a little bit hard to describe. Essentially, it allows you to run a separate Linux system on top of a kernel that's already running. So
it's a bit like PostgreSQL.
Yeah, it's a bit like PostgreSQL. From a user's perspective, it's a little bit like using VirtualBox in that you can just fire up another Linux system. On a technical level, it's not working the same way because they're sharing the same kernel, and like you say, using a PostgreSQL. And it has wonderful sort of ways of packaging apps. It makes it much easier. That you can sort of distribute this Chroot environment, and that way you bring all your dependencies in. A bit like a massive static compile, which obviously has some downsides, but also makes it much more portable.
Does it make it faster?
No, but it makes it not slower, like virtualization. It's faster than virtualization, like VirtualBox.
Yes.
But it's not faster than running it natively.
Right, okay.
But it shouldn't be any slower, or not massively slower. So that's now considered production ready. So that's
excellent. I mean, it's transformed like the low end box market.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so many providers offer it as the cheapest option next to KVM or whatever comes next. But yeah.
So how long do you think it'll be before? I mean, we all use VirtualBox loads.
Yes.
Just to download an ISO and then spin it up, have a play with whatever new thing we're trying out. How long before we can do that with containers?
I mean, to be honest, you could do it now if you want to do. The issue would be you'd need them packaged for containers because it's not entirely trivial. Because with virtualization, you just run it exactly the same as you would install it. You have your ISO that you download, wham, and run. With containers, you need it packaged as a container. So the only real hurdle would be getting those in an easier way than getting ISOs. Because to be honest, virtualization for the stuff we do is usually fine performance-wise. I was just thinking, actually, I have no idea how it handles access to GPUs and whatnot. Would that mean you could have 3D acceleration?
I don't know.
Guest system.
As I understand it, it's focused on server usage at the moment, isn't it? Containers. Yeah, it's absolutely. All about the batch insulation.
It's Red Hat.
Yeah.
Running out there. Mega tentacles and taking over the world, but in a nice way.
It's not for playing pink ponies or anything.
Yet.
Although I might be the first person to package it up, a container, or play it,
or think of it.
How long till we can expect Mycos containers?
Well, if you've got two floppy drives in your computer, you're sort of halfway there, I think.
Well, I need to start by having one floppy drive in my computer, to be honest.
That's true.
You can run more than one instance of DOSBox, can't you?
Yes, that's true. They can't really talk to each other. Oh, you might be able to emulate a null modem cable running between them.
Oh, yeah, because you've got that working.
I have null modem serial cable, sort of not networking.
As in serial port to serial port?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
You can do that. You can actually... I wrote a simple terminal emulator, like Minicom program for macOS, so you could log into a Linux machine.
Mike's rocking backwards and forwards now.
All those long nights in Bath, doing nothing.
Just as a guess, how many hours went into macOS?
It's hard to say. I lost count after 6,000.
How long in terms of time were you working on it before you had like a workable thing?
Before you had a job.
Funnily enough, I started on it just when I started working on Linux Format magazine. Yeah, so
the escape.
Yeah. The thing is, it just sort of grew like a...
cancer.
I wasn't going to make the comparison. I just started off with a bootloader, and then a bootloader that had a couple of system calls, and then could read a disk, and it just sort of spiraled out of control, really, and took over my life. And now we have videos about it, but I think that might be somebody's discovery.
Oh, yes.
moving swiftly on.
Moving on. Our final item in the news list. It's about Bitcoin. We've got a slight issue here. We're not entirely sure how to pronounce it because we've only ever seen it written down. It's either Mt. Gox or Mt. Gox.
Yes.
This is a podcaster problems.
Yes.
When you read all your news and then you have to speak about it.
We should have a sweepstake. I'm going to go with Mt. Gox.
I always thought it was Mt. Gox until I saw a forum thread and someone said it's ironically named. And I was like, how is Mt. Gox ironically named? it's Mt. Gox. But I don't know.
Well, yeah, I was led to believe by the internet that it was from Magic the Gathering Online Exchange, so a place you could trade virtual gold in some online RPG or something. But apparently that's wrong. Apparently I am wrong.
No.
It can happen.
In fact, this is unacceptable, Mike.
I think when you start to think something is right, it becomes right.
Well, okay, we're getting very meta here.
Anyway, however you pronounce it... It's probably no more. The website's shut down.
There was a theft, wasn't there?
Well, this is the thing that the whole interwebs and whatnot are debating. Allegedly, there's been 700,000 Bitcoin stolen through this misimplementation of the Bitcoin protocol that allowed the transaction ID to be changed. However, as a lot of people have pointed out, you don't not notice 700,000 Bitcoins go missing. Mm. I mean, at the peak, they were worth $1,000 each. So that's not far off $1 billion.
$1 billion.
You don't not notice that going.
Yeah. That's what you mean. Someone somewhere. But then that someone somewhere is a criminal.
Oh, yes.
So, and they, allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. And as a lot of people pointed out, a lot of the people who had money in Mt. Gox or Mt. Gox probably weren't particularly nice people. A lot of drug dealers,
There are nice drug dealers.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends are drug dealers.
I read a really, really awesome article about Bitcoin recently in Linux Voice issue 1.
Oh, yeah.
You were saying, Ben, that the creator or creators or this Satoshi guy, doesn't he, she, they still actually have about hundreds of thousands of bitcoins or something, and nobody knows where they are?
It's not known exactly how many they've got, because obviously they just get sent to Bitcoin addresses.
Yeah.
But you can see a large number of bitcoins that were created early on and sent to addresses that have already been there and they haven't been touched. They're still in those original addresses. And yeah, there's huge amounts. It's one of those things, how do you value that many bitcoins? Because it's the whole De Beers problem with diamonds. You can't sell them all at once, because that'll crash the market.
Yeah.
So someone sat around with a huge number of bitcoins.
It's really interesting.
Or gold in the UK government's vault.
Yes. Do we have any gold? I thought we sold it all.
Well, exactly. That's what happened when we sold it all. I think they announced their intention to sell lots of gold, which depressed the price, and then sold the gold, which depressed the price even further.
Genius.
Huge win.
So with Mt. Gox going down, what's happened to the Bitcoin prices? Has that affected it?
Since the Mt. Gox troubles started, the Bitcoin prices have been down. I think I saw them at around $500 a couple of days ago, if memory serves.
Still seems quite high. Well, I guess if they were at a high of 1,000.
Yeah.
Do you not have this running calculator going for how much money you would have had if you bought Bitcoin?
Well, actually, at the time, I was going to have once bought them, which was when I started research for the Bitcoin article and thought, actually, I could make some money on this. And I didn't, because it was too complicated to buy them. You had to do a bank transfer, and I got bored. I'm easily distracted. I think I went to the pub. But anyway, around that time, they were about the same price as they are now.
Okay.
So if I'd bought them then, sold them, and then bought them again now, I could have like twice as many Bitcoins. Uh-huh. But if I'd bought them and held on to them, I'd have made no money.
Okay.
And I'd be sweating because I may well have bought them through Mt. Gox, in which case I may have lost everything.
Yeah.
And that's the news.
Fantastic. Thanks, Ben.
Awesome news, Ben.
That brings us to discoveries of the finds of the fortnight.
Finds of the fortnight.
Finds of the fortnight. I really must get a grip.
Les objets trouvés.
Does anyone want to go first?
Can I go first, please?
Oh, thanks. Oh, I always love
itching.
It when you say that.
I want to go first. We had a small discussion on the way in here about whether or not it's unprofessional to take all of your discoveries, the finds of the fortnight, from the magazine. And I maintain that it is not unprofessional. Yes. So, discovery number one. These both come courtesy of Juliet Kemp, who in the issue of Linux Voice that's on sale now has a fantastic tutorial about the analytical engine and Ada Lovelace's programming thereof, which I just think is so super cool that there's this code from 1840 something or other, and you can step through it and look, follow the logic of how it works. It's just mad.
I don't feel remotely hardcore anymore. I used to feel hardcore as an assembly programmer. Now I'm just like a wuss. The program says he programs and uses HTML.
Juliet just beats you.
Yeah, completely. Just replace me with her.
You use electrons.
Yeah. So in the course of going through Juliet's tutorial for issue two, which is about Grace Hopper and UNIVAC, this old, ye olde business machine thing from the 50s. I've got just some gems of awesome knowledge out of there. First thing is, the machine itself, the UNIVAC machine, weighed 13 tons.
Good stuff.
And it transmitted signals through waves in mercury.
That is Whoa. Very cool.
Yeah.
That was the memory.
That's the RAM, is it?
Yeah, the way the RAM worked is it started the wave on one side of the big tube of mercury and it travelled through it, and obviously it could read, and then it could send the signal back. So you create this loop with a time delay.
Wow.
Which was the mercury.
That's brilliant. Amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't that? Yeah. So yeah, it's like that's an actual physical thing moving.
Yeah.
And the waves, actual waves. And because, you know, like hot mercury vibrates faster than cold mercury, sorry, chemistry people, I may have simplified that. it had to be at a constant temperature for it to work properly. So, you know, you plug this machine that's as big as a room, like as big as a garage, you know, you need to plug it in and it just has to just wait. And, you know, we used to complain about Open Office booting slowly.
Oh, mercury's not warm enough.
How spoilt we are. So that's cool. It's not the same principle at all, but that's how Bo Diddley's original tremolo pedal worked, with a rocker arm and some mercury inside it. And as the mercury level bobbed up and down, it broke and then reconnected the circuit. So you get that bonk, 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 bonk sound.
You learn so much in this podcast, don't you?
You do,
really.
Yes.
Tanzanian government and, yeah.
Other discovery number two. A combination of Juliet's awesomeness and my own original research.
Ooh.
Yes.
Generous, you
know. I know. So one of the images that she proposed to go in this tutorial is the cover of the Flowmatic brochure, which is the language predecessor to COBOL, I believe.
Yeah.
I believe I say that. I've got the words in front of me, but I'm still looking at Ben for his approval. He's nodding. He's nodding. It's okay. We weren't sure about the copyright of it, so I got in touch with the Museum of Computing in California to say, you know, what are the rights? You know, do we have to give a sort of attribution if we're going to use this image? And Juliet only included the front cover, but the museum's got the whole thing, all scanned it. And one of the benefits that the sales literature has of this new, they call it a new language for automatic programming. One of the benefits is that it, they say it bridges the gap between computer programmers and management. And there's one of those great, diagrams shared with some people who are representing programmers and some people who represent management, and like, and two arrows going between the two. So it's very, very literal. But the management are these two blokes wearing like Rat Pack, Mad Men style suits, looking really cool. The computer programmers are represented by a group of four people, two men and two women. The blokes in the same, like, really cool, sharp, natty suits. The women in these, just fantastic, wasted, come out to just below knee-length. I don't know how to... I don't have the lexicon of fashion. It's not empire line, I know that.
You lost me at what's wasted.
There's food involved. Ooh, back in the room. So, just as a sort of incidental historical document, they didn't mean to say it, but what it reveals then is that programming was very much a mixed job for chaps and chapesses. And they all looked really cool while they were doing it. So I don't know whether the inference is that management is something that's so hard it can only be done by men, or that programming is something that's so trivially easy that even women can do it. But it shows, I don't know, it just shows a shift in societal attitudes. And it's there are these like really cheesy ads from the 70s and 80s, those like comedy sexism adverts. I don't know what the website is, but it's really funny. Of like some geeky bespectacled fellow with some young lady in various states of undress looking at him with lustily because he uses C or something. I don't know.
Makes sense.
Anyway, I thought it was interesting. Only as a tangentially so, but still I liked it.
So did we include the cover? Were we allowed to?
It looks like you have to pay money, so no.
Oh, okay.
I'll find something else.
A penguin.
Yeah.
Anyone else want to go?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Everybody's looking at me.
No, I could go with mine.
Just because you're so handsome, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Finally, somebody's told
me. No one thinks that you say anything clever. We just like to look at you.
That's why I'm here, am I? Just to...
You bring eye candy to the podcast.
Yes.
You make the MP3s look so much nicer.
And the OG versions, of course.
And the Opus versions.
Yeah. Does anybody actually... If anybody listens to the Opus version...
There are three or four.
Are they? Yeah. People do download it. Okay. We aim to please. I discovered that, probably like a lot of people have, that PTV, the open source video editor, although I'm not sure if that's how it's pronounced, if it's PyTV.
Well, is it like the French place, which is like PTVier? Is it like PTV?
Is it?
I don't
know. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what it's a pun. But yeah, they are doing a fundraiser at the moment, much in the style of
very worth
Linux Boys magazine.
Yeah,
yeah. They want to get towards a 1.0 release, like so many free software projects that are still sort of lumbering in the 0.x's. So they want to do some polish, some extra features and things, and they've set up a fundraiser. I think it's a good thing that more open source free software projects should do. They want to raise 35,000. I don't know if it was, I think it would be dollars actually, for the development of 1.0. I find it quite interesting that they don't have a date for this.
Mm.
Did you see this?
Yeah. It's just going to stay open until they get the amount of money.
Yeah, and I mean, that might work. We always thought when we did the fundraiser for Linux Voice, our crowdfunding campaign, it was best to have a fixed date. Well, I guess we had to.
Well, because we thought we'd have to go and get real jobs if it didn't work.
Yeah,
you know, but rather than wait for 18 months, you know, homeless on the streets.
Well,
we are at the moment anyway. Yeah.
But yeah, I would have thought that having a date to work towards is a good way to get people... generate hype and get people really excited, get some buzz going. You know, you have a countdown, can we do it? And I think it encourages people to donate rather than, well, you can donate when you want and we might reach the target someday.
But they're also saying, I think, that they're going to carry on working on it anyway.
Right.
It's not like we would have had to have said just simply for the money that we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Whereas the PTV developers are going to carry on developing in the best of their ability, but they're saying... If we get this 35,000, then we'll be able to make the 1.0 release that we think will be a really important milestone.
I see. It'll accelerate
it. Video editing for Linux.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not going to say, look, we're going to throw down our toys and not develop it anymore if we don't get the 35,000.
Right, okay. That makes sense.
So I think that works well for them.
Yeah. I would like to see this done more, though. I was thinking of like Inkscape. You know, Inkscape should be 1.0 now. It's a great piece of software.
Is it 0.48 or something?
Yeah, I think I mentioned in issue one's cover feature that they're looking to get release a 0.9 soon. But
isn't Inkscape going in Steam, I saw?
Huh? What, as part of the development kit?
No, no, as in an app you can buy on Steam.
Oh.
To be honest, I read this on Reddit, I think, so... Right. It may not be fully accurate. It might also have been sort of an idea that was never fully fleshed out.
Excuse me for being a bit dim here, but I thought Steam was just games. Does Steam do serious software?
I've only used Steam like 3 times.
Right.
I've never seen software in it, but I don't
productivity
know.
Productivity software. I mean, yeah. if it raises them a little bit of money and gets some, if there's the Windows version in there, and if there is a Windows version, then yeah.
It's a good job when it comes to games that we have an expert writing for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why we have an expert writing for us. Yeah.
That's Liam Dorr with no S.
Oh. He has 198 games in his Steam library.
What a beast.
That's about 100 times more than me, if he gets 2 more.
Thanks for clearing that.
Yeah, and he runs the excellent Gaming on Linux site.
Yes.
Ah. Okay, that's it from me.
Thanks,
bye, bye everybody.
about this time last year when I was working for another magazine, I forget the name, I was trying to do some videos. And there's a few, at the time there were a few video editors. There was Pativi and there was
KDN Live.
KDN Live. And
stupid name.
I just couldn't, I don't know about what it was, but one of them, I forget which way around it was, one of them didn't have the feet, wouldn't support what it needed to do, and the other one kept crashing at a particular point. I don't know if it was the way the videos were being recorded or what. And in the end, I didn't have time to work it through, and I just gave up. And it was a shame, because, you know, video editing on Linux, it's not, you know, I'm not going to do anything that advanced, but it would have been nice to be able to do something. And I just think how much has changed in a year, because now there's Lightworks, okay, it's commercial software, but it's an option. And obviously, hopefully, Pativi will get up to that 1.0 release soon. Mm. So we'll actually have some real options for video editing on Linux soon. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, onto my discoveries. I've got two. The first one is Text Secure. It's an Android app. It's released by Whisper Systems, which is a company of Moxie Marlinspike, famous security guy. Basically, it's a secure messaging system for Android. It might work on iOS, or I don't know. And it's like your usual messaging system. I haven't used it that much, but there's a couple of things. I've been looking for a replacement for WhatsApp because I've never liked WhatsApp and I like it less.
$19 billion.
Doesn't it synergize with your Facebook usage?
I doubt it. it just annoys me. It integrates with both the text system, so you can text people without it, and it just texts their number, and if they've got it, it goes via the IP network, so you're not charged, extortionate SMS charges. Why do they charge so much for such little data? I don't know.
Well, you've only just thought that.
No, I've thought that for years. I've never understood
it. But people pay it, and they make lots of money from it.
You think about the per megabyte charge of SMS, it's phenomenal. Yeah.
Well, also, I read a long time ago that SMSs are sent can be sent in the packets that your phone exchanges with the data tower anyway, because they're so small. So your phone's already sending.
So it's free.
So yeah, don't quote me on this. It's like, don't talk about it in a podcast or anything, because I don't know if it's true. But I did read something about that. I might be a bit technically off, but why they're so short. That's why they're 140 characters. They just fit into these packets your phone is always sending to the tower.
So Texture, I haven't had time to fully investigate the features, and a lot of what I'm talking about I just learned from a Hacker News discussion, so it could be wildly wrong. But it looks like you can federate, so you can run your own server and sort of link it to the main TechSecure system. So do it that way. And the security, I haven't looked into technical details of the security, but the fact that it's produced by Moxie makes me think.
So your own server will do the encryption?
I think the encryption is done on the phone.
Oh, right, okay. Why would you run your own server?
Just so you've got your... You're taking it completely off their system, so you and your friends or whatever.
But isn't their system going to be responsible for pinging the app on the other phone?
Well, not if the other phone's connecting to your server as well.
Okay.
So you can then have your thing entirely separate, and you can...
Okay. I see what you mean. Wow, that is really good.
Again, don't quote me on this or talk about a podcast or anything.
I really like the idea of that Linux voice server.
Yeah, the security, again, like I said, I haven't looked into the technical details too much, but it should be pretty good. Encrypted on the phone, no keys stored that can be extorted by various governments. And it looks wonderful. I look forward to using it over the next few weeks, and I'll report back. As to how it goes in practice. It was only released a couple of days ago.
Well, you need to find some other people who are using it, though.
Yeah. Well, no, because you can text people who are it just sends SMSs. You're losing a lot of the advantage of it then.
Really. Well, I guess they won't be encrypted then, will they? Yeah.
Unless you use Watch 13.
Oh, best kind of encryption.
The second discovery, I think I've discovered this before, but I've only just really started using it, is PWIC. It's an open source, basically, version of Google Analytics. And actually, if you look at the new Linux Voice website, you'll see the little script to send your analytics data to one of our servers so you can keep tabs on what you're doing.
We can watch you all the time.
It's just a way of sort of seeing how our website's being used, making sure we can make the most of it, seeing what people like, what people don't like. As I say, it works in a very similar way to Google Analytics. But first of all, we're not sending your data to Google, and that was quite important for me. Obviously, there is the adverts, they send some of the data, but the rest of it's not sent. And the other thing is, I wanted to use the open source project just for personal reasons as well. But I've actually found it better than Google Analytics. It doesn't look as swish, but I find it easier to get the information I want out of it once you learn the way of it working. And it handles things like downloads better than Analytics does. And generally, yeah, I've just been really happy with it. It's got a nice little app I have on my phone so I can see how popular the website is at any time of day or night. It's wonderful.
It sounds like the basis for an awesome tutorial.
It could be.
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
Yes. Who wants to write that, then?
Actually, the one thing I would say, while looking over, while plotting our analytics, who's looking at website, I've discovered that you've got, obviously, the browsers there in terms of popularity. Chrome's the most popular. Then I think it then goes Firefox, Safari. It might go Safari, Firefox. But in fourth and fifth place, there's, unsurprisingly, Opera and Windows Internet Explorer. But the thing that really surprised me is each day it only comes down to probably about 10 page views that makes Internet Explorer more popular than Opera. If a few of you Opera people just click on Linux Voice, I almost said the wrong website then, click on Linux Voice, then Windows Internet Explorer will be our fifth most popular browser.
That's pretty cool.
I think that's quite phenomenal.
It's a good sign, that is, isn't it? Yeah. It's a bit scary how many people are using Chrome. I know it's technically a good browser, but by default, the amount of information it sends back to Google is terrifying.
To be fair, it's probably reporting Chrome and Chromium, as the saying.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
And those are my discoveries.
Thanks, Ben. My discoveries, one of them is a video on YouTube that I genuinely did discover, despite the fact that it's about macOS, the author of which is sat right next to me, and I've known him for some time and never told any of us about the existence of this video.
For reasons that will be clear for anyone who watches it.
It's a compliment. So the video is called, this gives you a clue as to the contents of the video, Mum Tries Out macOS 4.4.
At least it's the latest release.
And it's by, I guess it's the lad inside in the video, OS First Timer. At the moment, it's got 21,000 views. And it starts off with it's a fantastic little video, really nicely put together, and it's a good and pretty informative video as well. I have to give props to the guy, and it's a huge compliment. It starts off with the old Mac versus PC ad, but I won't spoil the surprise and saying what happens. But the fact that someone's gone to all this trouble to highlight your brilliant operating system, Mike. I mean, why did you not say?
Do you remember once someone made a video of me singing the Free Software song on stage? Yeah. Thanks for that.
Okay.
Whoever did that.
I'm sorry for bringing it up. Sorry that other people are now going to go to the video.
No, it is actually. It's nice that it is quite. It's all done in a good natured, good fun, and the guy, this lad, gets his mum to try out macOS, and they're actually really.
And she really likes it.
Yeah,
because he does a really good job of explaining why
Mike exists.
Why macOS exists.
You have to speak to my parents about that.
But she gets it.
Yeah.
You know, she gets the reason why.
And it is pretty cool. Yeah, I tend to keep my head down in this crazy world.
So, can we just go back a second? There's a video of Mike singing the Free Software song.
Somebody made a... I sang the Free Software song in a podcast once. Yeah, I think it was like
season one, episode one
of the non-Linux Voice podcast. Yes. And the, so I'm on YouTube in a few places.
Yeah, I've not seen that for a few years.
Yeah. You don't have it bookmarked?
No.
Okay. Hang on. I just need to use my phone briefly. Carry on.
And then my other discovery is really that KDE, the cool desktop environment, is really awesome.
Wow. I've used KDE. I never knew you used KDE, Graham.
I'm writing about it for the first time in probably a couple of years, and so that's made me focus on... I'm writing about getting the most out of KDE, and so I think KDE gets its defaults wrong in many ways, and it doesn't do itself any favours, like the glow, the blue glow around the default windows, the tiny text.
Loads of grey.
Yeah, loads of grey. Dark grey, sort of Windows 95 style.
You can't add and remove widgets without unlocking them first, and there's so much stuff, so many features that aren't well documented. And lots of KDE users just take it for granted because they've always used it. And so this tutorial that I'm writing actually goes back and talks about what's good about KDE. And genuinely, it's so powerful. It's ridiculously powerful. I mean, I've just written a section about KRunner, which is the requester that pops up when you hold down Alt and F2. It's a bit like GNOME Do, if you remember that. Yeah. A really fantastic.
Yes. So tool. It does actions as well.
There's loads of actions by default. It can solve equations, which I never knew it could do. Oh. You could actually just type in equations in there, you know, solve brackets X equals 6 minus 20, and it will tell you what the result is. It can do geolocation. It can email your contacts directly. It can Google Wikipedia, search images. And that's just KRunner, and all of those features are pretty much undocumented.
Yes, it's interesting you say this because I do like KDE. I rarely use it myself. I'm an XFCE user, but it's the default.
Another thing that now that I'm thinking about it. So you know when you in Dolphin the file manager and you look at the file list as names and then you can see the file size.
Yeah.
You can add different columns to show different things, different kinds of metadata. Well, you can do things like show the number of words in a text file. Ah. So you can sort all of your documents according to the number of words in them, which is great. Or you can bring up another column that has the resolution of images. So this one will say this is 600 by 800 or whatever, or the orientation of an image.
And brilliant.
There's just so many things like that. Somebody should write a book about it.
if only somebody had time.
Yeah. So that's my discovery. I have been using KDE for a long time, but I do think it's a great desktop.
Given that, like you said, the defaults are not particularly attractive and a lot of things are left sort of unknown, what distribution do you think showcases KDE?
I think the distribution that offers the most blank KDE installation. I use Arch. It doesn't do anything for you because you just need to change it. You just need to change it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, OpenSUSE is traditionally...
I don't like any of them. There's a lot of packages that aren't installed by default that are really useful.
Right.
SUSE is pretty good, but they're good in that they do twist KDE slightly, but I don't really think anybody... Kubuntu used to be very good, and I must admit I've not tried the recent Kubuntu release.
Might be a project out there for somebody.
Yeah, I certainly think there's space for people to create kind of KDE profiles of this is how I've got it configured.
And if you could just store that as an XML.
Yes, exactly.
Give it to someone. Here's a cool KDE setup. Yeah.
How easy would it be to install a package with the new settings on it?
Pretty straightforward because, those global... In fact, with KDE, it is all XML files and they are all stored in like user share, and it's just going to be a case of... either symbolic linking to those or overwriting them or creating some kind of system for swapping them over. Simple application to write.
So you could do like apps get install decent KDE environments.
Yeah, apps get install Graham's KDE. Yeah. If that's decent or whoever. Yeah. So they're my discoveries.
So now that we are approximately 80% of the way through the podcast, it's time for our halfway reminder.
Hey.
This is nice because we told security we'd only be 45 minutes.
Better be very quick in the next section then.
Still to come, there's speak your, vocalize your neurons.
Correct.
And the voice of the masses.
So, moving straight on to vocalize your neurons, voice of your neurons. It's so complicated. Simon Quayne got in touch. He said, "Hi, Linux Voice. Further to Andrew's comments about the unreadability of Perl, I would like to vocalize my neurons in defense of Perl. With the movement of modern Perl, Perl has become a much easier language to read and program in, and I dare say it produces beautiful code. A great video to watch on the subject is Paul Fenwick's highly entertaining talk, The Perl Renaissance, at LinuxConf Australia 2013. I always get those two countries mixed up. I meant to go and live in Sydney and look what happened. But there's a YouTube link. We can find a YouTube link. He says, also CPAN or its newest brother MetaCPAN has access to thousands of community contributed modules you can download and use freely in your own code. I'm a subscriber and very much enjoyed reading through your first issue last weekend. Yeah. Can I humbly suggest you search out a knowledgeable person in the Perl community to write an article on modern Perl for the tutorial section of the magazine?
Yeah,
If only we knew someone. So modern Perl, because Andrew, apparently you've been dissing Perl, here it says. I can't remember saying anything about
it. It was something funny in the last podcast.
Unreadability of
skaters. Yeah. You very bravely stepped into the fray of the comments thread and said it was just a joke, I think.
Oh, yeah, that was like 500 comments ago from what I've...
Now, I'm going to interestingly, Andrew hates me saying that, I'm going to interview Damien Conway.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we could put some questions to him. I don't think he's often far too busy to write stuff.
Right.
I'm sure there are many Perl people.
He'll know somebody, won't he?
So the neurons have been successfully vocalised, which means it's over to you, Chris, Andrew.
Whenever anyone says modern Perl, I see it written down. I hear that from the start of Modern Love.
You do that really well.
I know where to go at. Voice of the masses, then. Normally I go through the masses, I go through the voices and arrange them into rough categories, but I haven't this time because my internet at home has been so awful.
Did you get it working?
The man is coming tomorrow morning, which is partly why we're at the Jamboree today and not tomorrow, when apparently there'll be all sorts of really cool things announced that we're going to miss. Oh well, never mind. So... This Windows XP thing, it's about to reach its end of support life. Everybody wants to move away from it. Microsoft wants you to move away from it. Steve Ballmer wants you to move away from it, but onto some very expensive proprietary software solution. The taxpayers of Munich want you to move on to something free. Hooray! So we asked the question, what can Linux users do to welcome XP users? Install fest, skywriting, driving slowly around town with a megaphone, handing out free DVD.
I was thinking of that Blues Brothers style with the big speak on top of the car. You there, walking nervously away. Use Linux.
Awesome win. Do it dressed as a leopard seal. Combine two awesome memes. So, JD Schrock says, I'm just starting from the top here.
Good way to start.
Yeah, I know. I know when talking to my father and brother, the idea of a free and secure OS have been big selling points to them, especially as most of the applications they use are either web-based, have solid open source alternatives, or they've already been using open source and haven't realised that. I am confident I'll have both of them at least dual booting before the end of the year. Great work, JD Schrock. Says.
I know.
A list of equivalent software alternatives to make a smoother transition would help. Also, a file compatibility list so they know which files would need converting if needed. Now, we've spoken about this in the past, haven't we?
Yeah.
A list of alternative software things.
There are a few out there on the web, but maybe we should put one together on our
site. That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
And also, it helps because not all package managers make it that easy to discover.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
My girlfriend uses Linux. The hard drive broke on a laptop about a year ago and I just stuck an external drive in there with Linux installed on it, so I couldn't be bothered to take it apart and put one in.
You old smoother.
Yeah. And also I have this mortal fear of taking laptops apart. I feel they're never going to go back together again. And anyway, it works fine. And as we were just talking about the dents, the only thing I miss about Windows is Chrome. I much prefer it to Firefox. And I was like, what?
Why didn't you tell me? Do you not talk?
Strangely enough, the subject of web browsers rarely comes up in our house.
Beer, cider, cheese.
Yeah. All those, we know in detail.
That's good, actually. You sound like you have healthy... Sorry, Ben.
Sorry, Andrew, that was an aside to your...
Oh, yes. Where were we? So, yes. So, a list of equivalent software. Great idea.
We should do it.
Yes. We should, definitely. Bob says, why is this brand new news post under all the rest? Because it's in the podcast section, I think.
Yeah, I think we could do a better job of delineating between the sections.
Hierarchicalising.
I think, obviously, we've been incredibly busy, but I think... We should probably use a few little colours across something like
that. Well, it's very web 4.0.
Yeah.
So that's a reference to our brand new spanking website.
But it's brilliant in that it has... When we start to release content, we didn't want stuff to get lost.
Yes.
So this will always keep the podcast on the main page, and it'll also keep news stories on the same page.
It's basically just a lot more on the main page.
Yes.
Yeah. It's much better than the old.
I think so.
I think perhaps there is a bit too much text under the stories, particularly on small screens.
Yeah. The comments are broken on my phone.
Oh.
They get tiny, tiny, tiny single
comments. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
It's probably the amount of indentation for each one, isn't it? It's quite big. But yeah, when we've got time.
Yeah. Exactly. Next year.
Right. Two awesome suggestions coming up now. Brace yourselves. Uncle Mo says, give them, that is the XP users, a bootable pen drive with a long-term supported release and show them how it works. Perhaps include one on the front of a magazine you can buy in the shops with a guide on how to switch. We could do that maybe one day, I guess. Make sure that all the hardware works with the OS. If it doesn't, it will fall at the first hurdle. Guide them through opening their documents, email, etc. Now, giving somebody a bootable pen drive with something like Debian... it's going to be really cheap, isn't it? You can get a 4 gig USB stick for just a few quid, price of a couple of pints maybe, depending on where you live. If you live in the north, it's it's many more pints.
Oh, right.
Yes, you're right.
So yeah, that's a good thing to do if you care about someone that much. Connie Delboy, new, says, and I like this one. I like them all, obviously. The real way to get people to move to Linux is to make them pay for it. Say, just £10, down 50% from £20. The problem is that no one values something without a price. Oh, free is it? That means it's worth nothing. The price they pay is like an investment of trust.
Yes, it's true, yeah.
And with that comes a commitment to make an effort, give the OS a fair go. People want to feel their money is well spent. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it used to be the case. Point. You could go out and buy boxed sets of Linux distributions. I mean, I don't really know what exists anymore. I used to get SUSE box sets, Mandriva box sets, even Red Hat did back in the day. But
you can still buy unofficial ones. Is it osdiscs.com or something
you
like
can.
That?
Yeah.
And don't SUSE still do box sets?
Do they?
Am I dreaming?
Don't know. I don't know. They used to come with big, thick, chunky manuals.
I don't think they did since OpenSUSE.
No, it's been a while, isn't it?
Yeah.
Eric Schüttelschmidt says...
Did you see their email address as well?
No.
Have you got it there?
No.
It's like googleubuntu@microsoft.com or something.
Is that public or is that just...
No, it's not public, but...
It is now.
Because it's obviously not a real address. And I thought I could read that out.
Do you just scroll through all of our contributors' email addresses?
It shows them in my admin, my godlike admin view.
So Linux Voices data protection policy then.
Might have to rescind Mike's admin.
So we're all covered on the insurance apart from Mike. First thing to do is not call it Linux. Then if sneering, bribery, threats of violence and offers of illicit pleasures do not work in changing their minds, consider them unworthy of Windows 8. Only at that point may you install Linux in their computers. I mean, not Linux. Linux, what's that? Says Eric Schüttelschmidt.
Microsoft.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. Sultan of Swing says, my thought is that we should bring out a brand new magazine with a cover article that addresses this very important matter. Ah, good work. I like. Yes, and Sultan of Swing goes on to say, my mum's in our local women's institute. She's been using Ubuntu with a Cinnamon desktop for about 3 years. She shares the PC with my dad, who loves Unity. They're both in their mid-60s. Maybe I'll ask her and see if I can attend one of their meetings. They might teach me how to make jam in return.
Jamboree.
That would be a massive win. The Jam Festival.
A Jam Festival.
Right, XP user says... Ever tried converting a GNOME user to KDE or vice versa? Trying to convert an XP, Windows 7, 8 Mac user to Linux is even harder. Don't waste your time. Introduce them progressively during normal time and hope that they gradually make the transition themselves and not hope for change overnight. For your information, I've been using KDE since before Ubuntu existed and never understood GNOME 2. I still didn't understand GNOME 3 Unity now. And yes, hearing the word Ubuntu can make me switch off a podcast or magazine.
Well, probably should have put it in a comment to be read out then.
Chili Penguin says set up dual booting for them. Ray Wood says just go around with a CD and a copy of your favourite distro opening Mate or XFCE desktop. Yes, all of this. Starfire IT is right, but I'm just going to lower my voice now because it's just so profound and sad. Generally speaking, the community can cut the techier than thou and never utter RTFM again. If the person is still using XP, you can be damn sure they aren't going to read anything. If you don't care to help, don't say anything and let someone who will help answer instead. The Linux community does more damage to itself by not being civil than by not being user-friendly. As far as methods, OEM or personal contact is the only way it'll work. If people have to make the choice themselves, it's too hard already.
It's like breakfast cereals, isn't it?
Oh, I haven't heard that for a while.
Breakfast cereals.
Oh, we're back home.
Yes, whenever I see read the manual, it's just
fine.
God, it's just a waste of electrons.
Yes.
You know, you Google for how do I do XYZ, the top hit is somebody telling somebody else that they're an idiot because they don't know how to do it. Like, oh, you just wasted, waste of life, waste of carbon. Stop it, all of you. Many, many awesome comments here. Dan Simon Merlin says, I think we could learn from the Munich City Council guys. Yes, you can, of course. Find out more in an upcoming magazine.
You know, what I think we should do is not a clever idea, but I do think that we should put some money into, not us, but the free software Linux community should do some marketing. Because nobody, those XP users probably don't know that Linux is a viable alternative.
I guess we do that in some way by we present the face of Linux on newsstands around. People pick it up and say, what's this Linux thing?
Whether it's Google ads or I was thinking of putting more behind it. So as a community, we offer like an 0800 number, you know, call us anytime for free and we'll help.
And tell you to RTFM.
But I actually get a group of a few hundred people together who are willing to do this and come up with a system that actually does help people who maybe feel they don't have the confidence to take those first steps and aren't lucky enough to have a geek on hand.
Well, one suggestion I didn't see, maybe this isn't so good, but if somebody would create a Linux distribution where everything was in the same place as XP, not a visual copycat for various reasons, but just your menu's in the bottom left, and to get to your network settings, you go to the same place as before, so control panel, blah, blah, and so you just install it for somebody. I know it won't depend on the applications they've got, but it would be very much a case of you've got a new operating system, everything you did before is in roughly the same place.
So there's no learning curve.
No learning curve. And then, you know, if you later on you can get a different interface. But
and in fact, get everything to move gradually, you know, every day, just a little bit closer to
like the twits and the Malkin stick. I was just thinking that,
You know, to show you actually that there's a much better way of doing it than that way you were used to.
Well, so eventually it morphs itself into your KDE desktop. Or whatever. Why has my wallpaper changed to a picture from space?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, with little black pixels appearing every day.
I mean, don't forget that the alternative for a lot of people is Windows 8. So you've only got to look more like what they know than Windows 8.
Exactly.
And that's not hard.
Yeah. I mean, that's their other upgrade path for a lot of people now, isn't it? Because Windows 7, Microsoft's trying to stop people buying it more easily. So, even a standard KDE is a bit closer to Windows than Windows 8.
Maybe we could club together and take out an adverts in the official Windows XP magazine. So Manchester, we came, we saw. We're going to go in to the pub now with Mick Hucknall and
yeah, Morrissey.
And Morrissey,
even though he lives
spirit
in LA.
Of Tony Wilson.
Yes. Oh yeah, and of course, when I get back to York, I'm going to watch Ghostbusters.
Oh, is it on? I must admit, all the coverage recently has really made me want to re-see Ghostbusters. Yeah, I've not seen it for like 20 years.
It stands.
What coverage? What have I missed?
Harold Ramis has died. Egon.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Sorry to break it to you here on a podcast.
He's just gone to do more research. Yeah. That really is just a perfect... It's a perfect film. It stands up there with Back to the Future as just films where there's nothing wrong. There's not a line you could change. Everything about it is great.
I haven't seen it since I was so young.
That's a good place to leave it. So, thanks everyone. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, this is a very special podcast, isn't it? Recorded on our launch issue
day. Yeah, launch issue day. We're all slightly burnt out. But
thanks again.
Feeling good. Yeah.
Thanks again to everyone who supported us during Indiegogo and made the magazine work, because it is a product of the community. Yes.
And it's just going to get better and better.
Yep. Guaranteed.
So, thanks for listening, thanks for reading, thanks for supporting us, and we'll see you all again in 2 weeks.
Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.